Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we will go on. Got it being streamed. All right. Intro, we'll be right back.
I got it.
Okay. It's time for Red Salad Review with your host.
Welcome to Red Cell Review. Today we are here with Madeline Baccaro. What's going on, Madeline?
Oh, not much. I'm trying to promote my book.
Which is, right. You want to hold it up or you want me to hold up? Mine's a little glossy there. So you
Yeah, this is up. The hardcover.
In Your wow. Mind, the Infinite Universe of Yoko Ono.
That's it.
It's a very cool book. Now, the obvious question, why did you want to write a book about Yoko Ono?
Well, I didn't know I was writing a book. I've loved Yoko all my life, since I was 10 years old in 1968. Oh, wow. Okay. And wow. I used to just, you know, hear John and Yoko on the radio, and I just thought they were so exciting. I lived through the Bed-ins for Peace. I just always loved their positivity and the music, of course. And I collected everything about her, which back in the day, you know, there weren't many music magazines or anything, but they'd be in the major media too. So I saved every interview she ever did and listened to everything they ever said, collected audio tapes. And over the years, like, I would just write about an album or about an event or about an artwork. And one day my boyfriend gave me software and said, why don't you dump all these Word documents in and see what you have? And sure enough, I had a 500 page book, but it still took me at least 2 years to organize it and string it together and make it into a beautiful story about her life.
Yeah. And it is a very big book. It's almost 600 pages.
550. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big book. And so it's a long read. So, but you know, it's a good read. There's a lot of stuff in there I didn't know about. I never really followed Yoko Ono, so I didn't really know too much about her besides like the stuff with John Lennon and things like that. But the stuff with her family, like how she grew up, I didn't know her family was basically rich. You know?
Oh, they were one of the wealthiest families in Japan, and that could be a good thing. But for her, it wasn't. She didn't get any attention as a child. Her parents were, you know, socialites, and she just was very, very lonely and suffered from pretty much abandonment. And so did John Lennon. His parents left him. And they both had this bond over that sort of thing. And she also had to live through the war, the Tokyo bombings, right, and was evacuated from her, you know, home and was in a countryside farmhouse with her younger siblings. So she had to try to fend for food, and the rich kids in the area, well, the poor kids in the area, threw stones at them because they had nice clothes and they wouldn't give them food. And she was literally, you know, starving with these siblings until the war ended.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, sad to hear too that she didn't really know her father too much. You know, she had to basically, you know, see him in pictures, you know, and it's just, that's just a sad life. You think that really led to like her avant-garde type, you know, you know, the stuff that she's into, all that art.
It definitely did. Music. She was traumatized, and all of her art was cathartic for her. Everything she did was about what happened to her, or trying to. She was always in survival mode. You know, people say, oh, maybe she was too headstrong, or she was, you know, arrogant, or they don't understand the screaming and things like that. But you have to understand, she, you know, she was really a child of war. And and not only that, but the parents were very distant, and it just all had a big effect on her.
Yeah. Go ahead, Manny. I don't want to take up everything.
No, I was listening. I was very interested. Also found it interesting that you've been a fan for so long, because, you know, I'm not telling any secrets, but Yoko Ono is one of the most polarizing figures in modern music. You know, I don't believe she broke up the Beatles. That's nonsense. But definitely her influence on John Lennon probably didn't help the relationship between the men that were already, I don't want to say outgrowing each other, but artistically, they lived out of each other's pockets for so many years.
Yeah.
And Yoko was probably a handy target to blame for the breakup.
You know what, those phrase, right place, right time. She was wrong place, wrong time. You know,
yeah.
She was just the brunt of it all. They were separating anyway. She even said that she thought, you know, when she was with John, that he was going to stay with the Beatles. And when he told her, look, I'm leaving the band, she said, well, what am I going to do now? I mean, I'm an independent artist. What is he going to do? He's not going to be preoccupied with them. And she didn't understand, you know, that they would collaborate, and they would collaborate well, and take off running with the Bedouins for Peace and the War is Over posters and all the events they did together and the music. And, you know, they really were sincerely thinking that they were going to change the world for the better. They just, they were so hurt internally, both of them, that they wanted to heal the world. They wanted to heal each other and just spread peace and love. And it, you know, people don't believe that it was so innocent, but it really was.
Almost a naivety to it, don't you find, in a way?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Look back on it now and they say, oh boy, look, no wonder people thought we were crazy, but, you know, they wouldn't change a thing. That's what they did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's easy to also be a little cynical about it in our day and time. And also, you know, we're older now. We're not as idealistic as we were. I try to be, but
I was 10 when I got into them, and they're really, you know, their innocence and their naivete was understandable to a child. I was just on board with it. You know, maybe someone in their 50s saw it as a joke, and they knew they were clowns, you know, like people were US at clowns. Okay, if they want to laugh at us, as long as they're not picking up a gun, let them laugh at us.
You think Yoko Ono, though, had a huge, I believe she did, and I think your book kind of hints at that, but do you think Yoko Ono also had an effect in making John Lennon see the world in a broader viewpoint than he had seen with the Beatles? If you look at...
He saw it. He had seen it, and he wanted out. He was trapped in this mania, and he was looking for a way out. He was singing it in the song Help. You know, I need somebody. He just wanted to break out, but he didn't have the courage to do it until he met her.
Yeah, and well, I also think his worldview, if you listen to those Beatles songs, you know, they're very egocentric. I don't mean that in a terrible way, but he's talking about his own experiences, his own, you know, desires, his own feelings. You get to solo years. Yeah, I mean, the first couple albums are very, very, you know, internal, but imagine his most famous song. That's certainly of an older man. Still a young man, but it's an older man looking outward. And I sometimes wonder if Yoko Ono influenced that. Yoko's from a different, almost a different generation, but definitely a different culture than John Lennon. And their lives couldn't be more different until their lives, you know, colluded.
Well, imagine the song was co-written by her. In fact, in 2017, she did receive official credit for it. And they had a tape playing of John Lennon saying, you know, this comes straight out of her book, Grapefruit, which was Imagine This, Imagine That. And if I wasn't such a macho idiot at the time, I would have put her name on the record. So, you know, it was all her. I mean, not all. I mean, he wrote the melody and he wrote the lyrics, but the whole idea was
Well, it's a collaboration, like you said.
Right.
You know. Wayne, you got anything before I continue? I don't want to dominate whole thing.
And actually, since we're talking about the Beatles, what do you, because thanks to Yoko that she gave the song to the Beatles years and years ago, and they kind of worked on it, and it didn't really work out, but now they've just released Now and Then. What do you think of that new Beatles song?
I think it's great. They worked wonders with the tape. She had given them, you know, three or four songs and Real Love and Free as a Bird. And those were great. But this one was a little less fidelity to it. You know, it was just more, you know, harder to fix. But it came out beautifully. It really did. And people forget that, you know, she even said when she gave them that tape, she goes, now I have an opportunity to bring them back together in a way. So she wanted to do it.
Yeah, well, that's really cool. What do you think Yoko's influence as a musician, not as a visual or avant-gardist, but as a musician, do you think her music has made an impact in popular culture, not terms in sales, but influence on other artists that may have eclipsed her in sales, in your opinion?
Yeah, a lot of punks really admire her. She was, you know, Sean Lennon even says, you know, on the Plastic Ono Band album, her album, not John's, the one companion album, that, you know, here she comes from not knowing anything about rock and roll to inventing punk rock. You know, she's just all over the place. And you got the B-52s, you know, who vocalized patterns of based upon her vocalizations. You've got Public Image Limited. There's this song Annalisa on their second album that sounds just like one of Yoko's songs. I mean, there are people who love her in this world. They, artists, musicians, peace activists, women, you know, feminists. This is why the book is 550 pages. There's so many categories to cover. I go over every song on every album, with and without John. 33 years before she meets John as an artist. And she's only with John 12 years. And then she's 40 years without him. So this is a life. She's 90, you know, years old.
Well, she still looks great, by the way, if you've seen her recently, you know.
She's got some health issues now, but she's, you know, doing the best she can. And but this is a big, big story. And every bit of it is so interesting, from the ancestry to, you know, her child being kidnapped and her search for the child, them being followed by the FBI.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like endless. The deportation.
That's a crazy story in itself. It that whole, I mean, for God's sakes, they're musicians, you know, and here they are. Nixon has them on there. Actually, that should be a compliment, but, you know, Nixon has them on their, you know, enemies list, which is completely ridiculous, but. You're right. It is an incredible story. Even if you're I didn't read your whole book. I've read excerpts of it. You know, even if you're not a fan of Yoko Ono, the musician, it's an interesting story in itself of a person, you know, that's what makes it interesting. And that's why I think your book's well written, because someone who's not interested in Yoko Ono or even the Beatles, you can read this book, and she's such an interesting human being, and you make her human. It's not a two-dimensional character, and that's I think the power of your book. It actually
I spend a lot of time with her. She's wonderful. If you spend 5 minutes with her, you'll see why John loves her. She's incredible. Warm, wise, funny, generous. I mean, so generous. We were pen pals for a while in the 80s. Oh, wow. And I finally met her, and she started inviting me to all her art exhibitions and concerts. And it was just fabulous just spending time with her. And I would always talk to her about her art, and she'd be thrilled, because back then nobody was speaking about that. And she was just floored that I understood everything she was trying to portray in these art pieces. And I went through each one in the book too. And there's one that everybody thinks is so cute. It's A Hole to See the Sky Through, and it's a postcard, and it came with one of her albums. And it's just a postcard with a little hole in the center. And but really what it represents is she used to tell this story how when she was evacuated to the farmhouse during the war, her and her younger brother and sister would lay on the floor and they'd look up through a hole in the roof and they would see the sky. And that was just this limited view of peace and beauty that she had until, you know, she was brought back home on a rickety truck through the burnt out Tokyo, seeing her whole city in ashes. Nobody knows these, you know, aspects right. of her life.
Yeah, and that's what I think it is. I think really, no, like you said, nobody knows this that part of her life, because like I said, I didn't know all this stuff and all the stuff that she's went through when she was younger, and which is, you know, I think why the way she's turned out the way she did with being in that avant-garde scene. Do you really like that avant-garde, like the music that she did, like with John Lennon, those first two albums? I mean, were you into that? Or
so there's different levels of it. You know, the first one, The Two Virgins, that was just them noodling around with tape players. They were on drugs, you know.
Yeah.
I don't listen to that. Some people do, actually.
I mean, you just sit down and put it on and just like, you know, yeah, and your boyfriend comes in and he's like, what are you listening to?
Yeah, then they get into Wedding Album, and that's a little more interesting. They have the thing where they're calling each other's names over the heartbeat, and it's just really interesting. There's a whole explanation in the book of, you know, what that's about. And then you get into the Plastic Ono Band album, which is phenomenal. Yeah. There's sounds on there that people are still not making. Things she had this Joe Jones who made instruments for her album Fly in 1971. And there's percussion on there that's so incredible. Mm. You know, and what she did for John and what he did for her musically was he brought her the rock beat.
Right.
Because she was all over the place. She just really was more not jazz, but she was just improvisational and she didn't really have a root.
Yeah.
And then she says that he woke me up from my mind game because she was all esoteric and about, you know, imagine this, imagine that. And he gave her that rock beat and then she took off from there.
Yeah.
And he got Eric Clapton to play with her and Ringo and Klaus Voormann. And what's better than that?
Yeah. Actually, I was just watching on YouTube the other day. They did something with Chuck Berry. I don't remember what it was, but they were both doing a song. And there is a point where Yoko Ono is doing her thing. And then all of a sudden you see her on there, but her mic is completely cut off.
Well, that was the Mike Douglas show. And yeah, John wanted to meet his idol, Chuck Berry, and they had him on. You know what? You know when you have like a bad moment and people don't want to do it? It's really, and that just keeps getting repeated and repeated. It's not the best thing. But I love her music. She has so many beautiful ballads. She has so many songs, especially one album after John was murdered. It's the most sad and beautiful music you could ever hear. Mm. I listen to it all. I love it.
I like a lot of the songs on it's Double Fantasy, right? Where they both did like half and half.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I like some of her songs on there are actually very good. You know, because I always hear Yoko Ono, you know, how can you like her stuff? But I'm listening to that album. Like they're actually good songs.
Actually good songs. People don't even know. I've had friends of mine who know that I love her so much all my life. Mm-hmm. They go, I never knew she had normal songs.
Yeah.
Where have you been? But you know, there's just been so many lies written about her.
Right.
And that would never fly these days. You just go on the computer and research it, right? You know, you couldn't do that. And people just want to believe what they believe and they perpetuate the lies. And it's just so unfair because she's nothing like people make her out to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why somebody wrote me the other day because we were talking about the Yoko Ono thing. And he's not a fan of Yoko Ono because he thinks that she's fake in a way with the piece and all that stuff, and it's not really real, it's just for money. So what are your thoughts on that, and somebody that thinks that way about her?
There's nothing fake about her. I mean, she's the most sincere person I've ever seen. You know, I compare it to like Patti Smith or Iggy Pop. You know, they just do their thing no matter what people think. They're genuine and sincere. They know their work is good, and they need to, you know, Patty's more of a peacenik in a way too. So who doesn't want world peace? Who's fake about that?
Was she
making money off of world peace? No, there isn't world peace. Mm. What are people talking about? It's crazy.
Yeah, so I never understood, like, where did that even come from? Like, why would somebody even think of that, you know? Because that's all she's ever, from all of I've known of her, that's all she's ever really stood for is peace and getting everybody to, you know, to be together. And to hear people thinking that, you know, she's not really for that. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Doesn't make sense. I mean, all the lies and that is, people were jealous of their relationship too. I mean, whether it was because of the Precious Beatles or because they thought they were going to marry John Lennon, or, you know, they thought, I'm never going to find a love like that in my life. It was just all a selfish thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I also think that it was easy to paint a role in the villain. I mean, especially back then. I mean, if you think about, you know, in the 1960s, just women musicians, I'm talking about rock and soul and blues, there's always been tons of women musicians. And now in this modern era, you know, there's just as many male or women musicians in rock bands and heavy metal bands, alternative bands, and there are males. But back in the 60s, when the White Album came out, 68, there's what? Janis Joplin. There was Grace Slick.
Yeah.
There was rumblings from Susie Quattro and Fanny, a band called Fanny.
Right.
I think I can end my list there. You know, yeah, I know I'm missing
Joni Mitchell,
some,
maybe.
Yeah, but yeah. Joni Mitchell was more on the folk jazz side, you know. Then you got Yoko Ono, who doesn't sound like any of those people I mentioned. She definitely does not have a blues background.
No, and she's
which
Japanese.
Makes sense. Yeah, exactly. She's Japanese, right?
But back then, you nobody know? Even knew what sushi was in America, right? Now yeah. It's like everywhere.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And yeah, and that's another thing. I mean, not only is she obviously a woman, but a different culture. So I think a lot of that had to do with the times. The feminist movement was still in infancy. As you point out, Japan was, we were only 20 something years away from the war, which, you know, when you're a kid, that sounds like 300 years. But for Yoko Ono, that was a real experience. That wasn't something that was in a book.
It wasn't. And when she was in America with her family, she was during a time where everybody was anti-Japanese, and they moved back to Japan for safety. And so they came back again. But yeah, there was racism, sexism, you know, the troubles of being a woman. Even as an artist, she was struggling as a woman because she was all among men. John Cage, all those, you know, Fluxus people, they were all men. And she started her own concert series. She got a loft on Chambers Street, and she hosted anybody who wanted to perform. And that was great that she was one of the first before Meltdown, you know, she just hosted this thing in her loft. And but it was mostly men.
Yeah. Do you mind if I ask you about your background? You know, are you a professional journalism writer, you yourself?
So when I was a teenager, I don't know if you've heard of CMJ, but I worked for CMJ magazine. It was College Media Journal. All the college radio stations would report their playlists every week, and I would write reviews and interviews, and was working for them for 5 years. And then my parents moved to Florida, and I had to get a real job that paid better, more than $20 an article once or twice a week. So I did miserable jobs all my life, but I've always dined to write. I've been writing, you know, anyway, for my own self or for random publications. I've done little pieces for Discoveries and maybe Goldmine and Mojo, you know, here and there. But I have a blog, madelinex.com, where I write about all my favorite music. And my stipulation is, you know, I write about things I love. You know, I'm not going to write about something I don't like because there's somebody out there that likes it and understands why it's good. So why bother? I'm just going to tell you why something is great. So, you know, I write about, it's been since 2002, I've had the blog. And once I retired 5 years ago, I started putting together this book.
Very cool. Can you hold up the book again and show us the cover one more time? Thank you. So tell me about that cover.
The cover was a greeting card I found online by an Australian artist. Her name is Kat MacInnes. And she had tweeted it once, and Yoko said she loved it also. So when I had the book together, I said, yeah, I think it represents Yoko in every era, pretty much. Like, what picture would I use? You know, what age? So I got permission from Kat, and she was happy to let me use it. So that's it.
Thank you. I really love the covers.
So. It works.
Everybody
really well,
loves it. I've got the t-shirts now. They're available on the site as well, conceptualbooks.com, where you can get the book.
Very cool.
And you self-published yourself, right?
Yeah, I talked to a few agents and a few publishers, and they're like, well, first of all, you've got to cut this down to 250 pages.
250?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Elvis Costello's biography is something like over 700 or 800. I don't know. It's really massive.
Really?
Yeah, I have his book. I haven't read it yet. Unfinished Music. It's because I'm reading a book on FDR. I'm one of those boring guys. So, wait, what questions do you have?
Well, now since you just brought that up, now since they wanted you to break your book down, I mean, I obviously didn't think of that, but would you have done that and then maybe made like other like part two, part three type thing? Or
no, I didn't. I wanted it all together because nobody's going to buy part two because the Beatles are done. You know, like
that's true.
No.
Wow, I never thought about that. Yeah, but
what guarantee is that they're going to let me do a part two? You know?
Yeah.
Well,
true.
Okay, you've got me there. I just think it's really interesting that you wrote this book on Yoko Ono. I have such mixed feelings of her as an artist. Like Wayne said, what was that? Unfinished Music, Volume 1 and 2. I avoided buying that for years, and I finally bought it on CD. And I thought, my God, you know. And then I listened to the Wedding album, and I go, well, it might not be my cup of tea, but it makes a little more sense, you know. Conceptually, it makes more sense. And then, like Wayne pointed out, you get the Double Fantasy, and not only is there song structure, but she's almost like a couple of years ahead of her time. If that album had come out, I mean, it sold millions because John Lennon, but if she had put out a solo album and forget it's Yoko Ono and threw it on MTV, I think that thing would have sold a lot more on the merits of her music.
Definitely.
I think it was a little ahead of its time.
Well, John always wanted to, you know, put her on an A-side of one of his records, or he said, well, why don't I record your song? And, you know, this way people won't. He said, well, then they won't know it's my song. She was very headstrong. She didn't want any help like that. She just wanted to do her own thing.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah. And you mentioned an album she did after that. I remember the cover. It had a glass of water, and it looked like John Lennon's glasses. Maybe they were really his glasses.
Yeah, Season of Glass.
Yeah, and you were mentioning that album, and I take it that album obviously was recorded in the aftermath of his murder. We're not going to mention the scumbag who murdered his name.
No.
But you know, was that album, what was your take on that album lyrically and musically, you know, for you?
It's stunning. It's really beautiful. So a lot of the songs, maybe 5 or 6 of them, were written in a while ago in the 70s, but it's amazing how the lyrics match up to what happens to John. And it's incredible. There's a lot of things in her life that she kind of predicted unknowingly, you know, that, mm-hmm. that came true. And some of those songs have words that you wouldn't believe. But it's a stunning album. There's no screaming in that sense on it. It's all traditionally structured songs and beautiful ballads. And it's heart-wrenching when you know what happened and you're listening to this. It's incredible.
I don't think I've ever heard. What is that called? I never heard of it.
Season of Glass.
Season of Glass. Okay, I'll have to check
it's got
it
a stunning cover, Wayne. I remember it. It's kind of a simple picture, but it's very powerful. There's a glass of water, and it looks like John Lennon's bloody glasses, but not in a grotesque way. It's not you know.
They're placed on a table, and they're in front of the window that looks out onto Central Park at the
Dakota, yeah,
and it, their it's, bedroom it, where they live. And it really says a lot. I mean, glass, what is it? It's fragile. It could be shattered. The glass she has, it's half empty or half full, however you look at it. It's just a very incredible statement she's making there. I mean, you can get whatever you want out of it, but she wanted to show those glasses to show what was done to John.
Yeah, and it's incredible. And also her she's actually maintained John Lennon's legacy. None of the releases that she's done, now there's probably too many greatest hits packages out there. I don't think that's not Yoko's fault. Every band that's nowadays have left, they literally put two or three out a year, not of John Lennon, but what whoever. It's kind of ridiculous. But she's actually honored his legacy. She doesn't fill the market up with you know, when Jimi Hendrix died, there are a lot of releases that you damn well know if Hendrix is alive would have never seen the light of day. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't get the impression that anything that Yoko Ono released with John Lennon's name is anything he would have been ashamed of. No. It's all very high quality. It sounds great. You know,
she took very good care with everything. She's in the studio herself with the remixers. She has a certain team of people that she trusts and works with. Sean, now that, you know, when he became old enough, he had some input and he was in charge of the last few things. And they're incredible. They put out, you know, all the outtakes, all the demos, but everything in it, you know, really well produced, tasteful way. There's a Mind Games anniversary box coming out in June, John's solo album, and that's going to be massive.
Really?
And that album has a lot of beautiful songs that he wrote for her, you know, even when they were separated at the time. So
Now, have you talked to her recently? Have you showed her the book or sent her the book? Or
She has the book. Sean has been very supportive also. He adores it. He's like so happy because it really, you know, it shows the truth and the love story of his parents and how, you know, she really saved him and they saved each other.
Yeah. And what about her daughter? Have you like had any contact with her? Her
daughter has the book, Yoko. She's in Colorado. She's an artist now as well. She has two children, Yoko's two grandchildren. So thank God they got reunited when they did.
Yeah. Because that was another terrible story too. Because her husband wanted the daughter, right?
Well, her ex husband Tony Cox was kind of like her promoter and partner.
Right. Okay.
She met John.
Yeah.
And he pretty much raised the child just like John was raising Sean, because you know Yoko was an artist and they were very close, the father and daughter. But when Yoko married John, they hung out together a lot, pretty much at first. But he didn't want the child living with John and Yoko because of their lifestyle and, you know, the constantly traveling and the drugs at the time. So he just absconded with the child. And it turned out they were living within a religious cult for years, and they were hiding for more than one reason, more than hiding from John and Yoko. He did leave the cult later on, and he was afraid that they would also find them. So it was a big mess. Yeah. And, you know, years later, in retrospect, they were both unaware of how much they made each other suffer. And, you know, everybody was sorry for it in the end, but it was a traumatic experience for Yoko to be. She didn't see her from when she was about 6 or 7 years old until she was a grown woman having her first child.
Wow. Okay. That's a long time.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. What's Yoko and Paul McCartney seem to have a complicated relationship. What's your take on their relationship as people?
She actually met Paul first, right?
Yeah, she she was looking for, you know, John Cage, the great avant-garde composer. She had worked with John Cage a lot, and it was his birthday, and all these different artists were getting together manuscripts and lyric sheets from other artists to put together in a book for John Cage. So somebody told Yoko, you know, go and see these Beatle guys, go see Paul McCartney, John Lennon. So she found Paul first, and he said no, he didn't want to give anything up. And she was thinking she's gonna get musical scores, like, you know, notations on paper, but they didn't, they just wrote lyrics, right? So he says, oh, go and see John Lennon. But before she could go and see John Lennon, she had an exhibition, her first London exhibition at Indica Gallery. It was owned by this guy, John Dunbar, who I had the pleasure of hanging out with over the summer. He's so wonderful. It was just so great to shake the hand of the guy that introduced John to Yoko. And, you know, she was setting up the exhibition for the next day, and John Dunbar brought John Lennon in, and Yoko was angry because she's like, I don't want anybody in here, I'm setting up. But he said, oh, just meet this guy, he's kind of a millionaire, you know, you'd like him. And she's like, no. So that's when they kind of connected, because he saw her first art piece that he saw. It was on the ceiling, a little painting that had a tiny little word in the middle of it. And you had to climb up a ladder and grab a magnifying glass to see it. And he climbed up and he saw the word, and it was yes. And at the time, everybody was like cynical in the art world. He was just cynical about the whole art world. And he thought, whoa, this is really a positive message. What else do you have? And he saw the apple on the stand, and he took a bite of the apple. So that made her mad too. She's like, who is this guy? And then after that, they just couldn't stop thinking about each other, even though they didn't get together for another 18 months. They were both very shy and apprehensive and both married. And so that's how they met.
Yeah.
And then the Paul, you know, she had seen Paul first, but, you know, Paul is up and down, you know, once in a while he's like, oh, Yoko's great, you know, because they're getting along. And when they're not getting along, you know, it's love and hate.
what is it with them? Like, what did they not get along about?
It's business, you know, it's Apple business. So even the best of friends, like even the Beatles themselves, you know, they got torn apart by this mess, by managers, by, you know, getting all of the publishing rights to their songs weren't their own. And anybody would be angry at each other with that kind of situation. So it's up and down with them, but they're family, you know, they've got a history, and she's close with all of the children. Paul's daughters love her, and it's all fine.
Yeah. Yeah, because I always remember some people always saying how she was like when she was with the Beatles, and how she would just act out or whatever. But then they put out that documentary. I can't remember the name of it, but it was just like a year back. Ago. Get Back. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And you see her sitting there. She's not doing anything. You know, she's just with the group, and she's, you know, laughing, and they're just sitting there just playing music, you know. Yeah. So
and
it just
people actually came up to me and said, you know, that's interesting, because she was really like human in that. I'm like, she is a gorilla. Like, she's human.
Right. Yes. Well, that's what the people make her out to be. Like, she's some like the people used to call a dragon lady, you know, and that's what you get a vision in your head, that she's going to be this woman
tiny
demanding
thing. She's exactly. 4'10", 4'11" at the most. And she's so gentle and amazing. It's crazy. And just all the anonymous donations to charity, the anonymous help she's given to people in the Beatles world, to strangers, to families that she's come across along the way, to children. It's just she just does it anonymously, so people don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Wayne, if you were hanging out at the studio all day not saying anything, you would annoy me. So, yeah. Our band would have disbanded because of you, Wayne. Okay. Just to let you
know. Well, John wanted her there, and he was really, really possessive. He was taking her into the bathroom with him. I mean, it was too. Doesn't she look like she doesn't want to be there? She's reading, she's painting, she's doing her own knitting. She doesn't want to be. She's thinking about her next artwork.
Right. Yeah. And then I just was hearing today too, I was listening to something, and she was actually during when they were recording the White Album, she was recording herself talking.
Right.
And yeah. You know, she wasn't paying attention to what they were. And then you can hear in the background, they're working on the music and she's just talking louder and, you know, like who cares mm-hmm. what they're doing, exactly. You know?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of bathrooms, the band Judas Priest recorded in Ringo's old house where they filmed a John Lennon Imagine video.
Fitness park
and
yeah.
They brought recording equipment there, and Rob Halford, the singer, you know, he had I guess the room where the, you know, with the bathroom, so he calls KK Downing, the guitar player, goes, come over here, look at this. And there were two toilet bowls, and one said John and one said Yoko. Anyway, so that's the Judas Priest Rob Halford story about the recording there. That was his highlight.
Manny's a huge Alice Cooper fan. Can you do any Alice Cooper Beatles tie-ins or Yoko Ono tie-ins?
Well, I love Alice, but see, I didn't mention him this time, Wayne.
You didn't, but there's no Yoko Ono Beatles tie-in.
Well, John hung out with Alice a lot during his lost weekend in LA.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, they drank like fish back. Yeah, they're part of the Hollywood Vampires, Wayne.
That's true. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, they would they'd get so hammered, they'd get thrown out. How bad is it when you get thrown out of the Rainbow? How hammered are you, or the whiskey or whatever they were, that you get thrown out? You know, that's pretty bad. So
in your book, is there one story that's like your probably your favorite one that you wrote that's in here? Is there one that's
yeah, there are a couple. I mean, a favorite one, which is my favorite because it's sad and heartbreaking, and I had to get it out and I had to tell it truthfully. What it's called, A Wind That Never Dies, and it's all about the death of John and how she handled it, and it's heartbreaking, but it really needed to be told. And in the book also, I have everything I say is backed up by a quote from either Yoko or John or Sean or anybody, Phil Spector, Paul McCartney, you know, to just round out and prove that this is the way it really happened. Right, and a lot of people don't know that Paul was instrumental in getting John and Yoko back together when they were separated. And there's Paul talking about it and Yoko talking about it. And it's really a beautiful thing that he did.
Yeah.
And, you know, if he hated her so much, why would he do it?
Right. Yeah, exactly. A few months ago, we had on actually your friend, and that's why you're on here, because you mentioned you saw our interview with Laurie Kay, because she interviewed Yoko and John right before he passed away. I don't even know what I was getting at with that, but God, I don't even know what I was getting at. I got sidetracked. Manny, take over.
all right. So
my hand is gone.
Laurie has a great book. It's her memoir, and yes. I have a blurb on the back cover praising her book, and we're really supporting each other. So hey, Laurie.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, actually, her book is coming out next month.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. It hasn't been released yet. Yeah. You know.
December 8th.
Yeah.
So yeah, so there are other chapters, or there's a chapter about the bed, and there's a chapter about the recording of Hey Jude. There's a chapter about, you know, Happy Christmas. There's the War Is Over posters, a whole chapter about her style and why she wears the things she does. Premonitions is the one about everything that went on that she might not have been aware that was going to happen in the future, and how she really followed a lot of psychics and oracles, and she was kind of obsessed with that, and some of it might have helped her and some of it might not, you know. So
right.
So very cool.
Yeah, and you get very into detail with everything in this book, so it's, if you know, you want to know anything about Yoko Ono, what's in this book, you know.
Yeah, anything. And also it's just that I think everybody in the Beatles universe would appreciate it, because you know the story, you know the characters, and if you want to know the truth, you know, this is it. I mean, and it's an incredible story.
Yeah, it definitely is. Manny, you got anything else before we
No, yeah, I just thought I just found it I think it's great that you wrote this book and on her, because I think it's I think she's an overlooked cultural figure that is mostly known for either being just John Lennon's wife or John Lennon's widow. And for decades until recently, she was kind of blamed for the Beatles breaking up. Here's my question now, speaking of Yoko's music. I noticed during the 90s, especially when alternative rock came into the forefront, there was a reassessment of her as a musical artist. There was even a huge box set, if you remember.
Yes,
released.
Ono Box came out in 1992. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. What do you think led to critics and music critics? I mean, she had plenty of critics, but music critics to finally go, hey, this is something worth listening to. This is something worth investing your time in, where for the previous decades, two decades prior, even, she was kind of dismissed for the most part, you know.
Oh, well,
as an artist,
I think
a musical artist, I mean.
The reason for that is I think fans were instrumental in getting Ryko Disc to release that box. And then once critics heard that she had conventional songs and how wonderful they are, they couldn't give it a bad review. They were saying she was ahead of her time. She's got some traditional stuff here. This can't be overlooked. That's the answer, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I just found it amazing that it just.
And then they
around.
Released every album by itself starting in 1997. They started releasing all her solo albums, Ryko, on CD. So, and then
there
issue projects and of the vinyls. So yeah, it just grew and grew. And her concerts sell out. I mean, you know, it's not like she's an artist. She's a musical artist and she's an artist. So
yeah, I agree with you. Which is funny because I'm not sure if I would have agreed with that statement in my 20s, you know, but I agree with it now.
You have to mature and read the truth and try to, you know, see it for yourself, because you're just listening to negative people, you're never going to find the truth.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't just that too. In my case, I can't speak for Wayne, but in my case, you know, my musical vocabulary wasn't that expanded yet. You know, I love my heavy metal and hard rock, but I didn't start venturing beyond that in my 20s when I started listening to jazz and blues. And, you know, I still love the stuff I loved growing up. I didn't sell it down the river, but I don't think I had a wide enough musical palette to really appreciate Yoko Ono at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you what to listen to if you ever want to know. And it's, you know,
actually,
it's merely like a tenth of her life. You know, there's so much people focus on Beatles. It was 12 years with John, right?
Yeah,
but of course, the rest of her life, she's maintaining the legacy. But it's everything is such a blip in time with her, you know, because it's such a vast, it's 91 going to be in February. So,
well, since you asked, if you were to recommend a Yoko Ono album or song, either or, I'll let you decide. What would you recommend if someone goes, what is this Yoko Ono about? You know,
making a playlist.
Yeah. If somebody said, all right, a song or an album that's going to convince me that Yoko Ono is the cat's meow, what would you, what song or album would you personally choose?
I always choose she has a couple of double albums, but Approximately Infinite Universe, because it has everything. It has the rockers, the ballads, and some really beautiful stuff. There's a kind of a playlist on my blog. It's called Yoko's Winter Songs, and it's songs that I play when it's snowing. It's just beautiful, beautiful songs. So you could look at that at madelinex.com. Yeah, I mean, it depends what you're in the mood for. You want to get freaky? I'll listen to Fly. If you want to get, you know, melancholy, the Season of Glass, or, you know, there's so much.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there. Well, very cool. What?
No, Wayne, I was saying, you got anything that you want to ask?
No, no, I think we're done. Are we done? Are you done?
Yeah, so I guess we're just going to... So, Madeline, where can we get the book?
Yes.
So you can get the book. I guess internationally, it's best to do through Amazon because of the shipping costs. But you can get it through me at conceptualbooks.com, which is the only place that you can get the hardcover and is an option of getting it signed by me. And I also have the t-shirts there. And it's also at BookBaby. If anybody's on that BookBaby site, you can get it there. But yeah, it's on Amazon. It's everywhere.
Very cool.
And what's your blog's, what's your blog called, please? Again.
It's MadelineX.com.
Okay, so that, all right.
You MadelineE. That's how it's Madeline, MadelineX.com.
Perfect.
Yeah, check it out. You'll like it.
I'm going to check it out. And thank
you
for
your Facebook, and you've got all the shows that you've been going to lately. What's some of the recent stuff you've been to lately? I know you just went I know you just went to something recently. I just saw it on your Facebook.
Oh, me?
Yeah, you.
I went to something recently. Let's see. I reviewed the Stones album. I reviewed Sly Stone's book. I really don't go to a lot of shows anymore. Sparks, because I do some work with them. So we went to all over London, all over England with them, and LA.
A picture of you somewhere. I don't remember.
My trip to London, I have a whole blog about that.
Maybe it was an older picture. Here it was. It was. It was, you reposted it. Sorry. So it was from 2017. Who was this? Sparks.
Yeah, Sparks. Yeah. I see Sparks a lot. I've been writing the newsletter for 20 years.
Yeah. So now you got the Yoko Ono book. Is there anything else that you're working on? Not maybe another book or anything you have in mind?
Yeah. Well, people are asking me to put the blog stories into some kind of. Do you have a book? Do you have a book? And I'm like, well, I just have to figure out a way to organize it and. That could be my next thing.
Oh, very cool.
People very like cool. Writing because it's, you know, passionate. I was there. These are about things I love. It's the history. Younger people like it because they don't know. Older people like it because they're feeling like the memory is coming back. And they always say, you know, every time I read something you write, I feel like I was there.
Right. Yeah.
That's comes from loving it so much.
Yeah. And then you're sharing your personal experience. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. First concert was John and Yoko at Madison Square Garden when I was 14.
Really? Wow, so it comes full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. Madeline, again, everybody, please go check out this book.
Thank you.
In Your Mind, The Infinite Universe of Yoko Ono. You put a lot of hard work into it. And I really definitely think that everybody needs to read this. Even if you're not a fan, if you think Yoko Ono is a bad person, read this book and it'll definitely change your mind, I think, anyway. And I know a lot of people that are watching this show need to read this book. So you better go get it.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yes. And Madeline, thank you very much for coming on the show.
And thank you for the pleasure of your company and your time. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, again, please hit that subscribe button, ratsaladreview.com. And if you're watching this now live, I will be around 10 o'clock. I will be playing music at freeworld.fm. So join me on there. All right. So until next week, we will see you. Actually, no, tomorrow I have an interview at 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern. Join me. I'll be live on YouTube. All right. So join me there tomorrow as well. All right. See you guys next week or tomorrow, whatever. Goodbye.
Thank you. You have a good one.